This episode is brought to you by America's Rehab Campus. Get on the road to recovery with the best rehab in beautiful Arizona. Dial 1-833-272-7342. That's 1-833-ARC-REHAB.
Ladies and gentlemen, you are now tuned in to the Archer.
Morning or good afternoon, wherever you're at, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for tuning in to the R-Cast. My name is Buddha, and I came in today with a good energy, man. I got my boy here. He's been working here for a little bit now, and I love his energy. I'm going to introduce him here in a second, but he walks around here, and I know that he's helping people on a daily basis. I heard a little bit of his story earlier yesterday when I was getting ready to leave, and it just put me in a good spot, man. So I'm very grateful and thankful that my brother is in here with us today. Ladies and gentlemen, give a huge round of applause to my homeboy, Alex Lopez.
Thank you. Thank you, Buddha.
Yep. How are you doing, dude?
Pretty good. Yeah, man. I'm hanging out. It's been a beautiful day. I love hanging out with our participants here as well as the staff. It's always good energy, man. If I'm not feeling it, then I will be after the morning, after talking to people, especially like people like you, Buddha.
It's all love, man. That's what's up. Yeah, dude. When did you start here?
I started in September, actually. Yeah, I was trying to get in here a little earlier.
Okay.
But yeah, I was just working. I was finishing up work at the homeless shelter, Primavera Men's Shelter.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, I was helping with the facilitation of all of the medication, as far as even cooking, the cleaning in the bathroom. I'd be all over the place, if you will. Yeah, it's kind of crazy. Yeah, and I tell the guys I'd switch aprons and the gloves, if you will, from the kitchen into the bathroom and vice versa.
Hey, yeah, dude, that's cool, man. No, I could definitely tell you are a busy person. That's why I loved it. I was so excited to get your energy in here, man. So, you know, you've been here since, you said, September. Other than here in the homeless shelter, was that your first experiences working in this type of a field, Doug?
Not really. I've been working in this type of field since I was about 18 in college, if you will. And so to begin with, I was working with disabled adults and children.
Oh, that's dope.
Yeah, and a lot of that led into, like, some of them had substance abuse issues, which I had not any knowledge of, if you will. Just random people offering them drugs, if you will, just so they could fit in. Hearing all those stories resonated with me. And then furthermore, moving into working with Southern Arizona AIDS Foundation, there's a lot of substance abuse there, and I got to see it forefront when I was doing housing inspections. It's
Man,
something,
that's so sad.
It is. And again, like, you want to give them the best help at that time, but your hands are kind of constrained to only the jurisdiction that you can have at that moment.
Yeah.
So I do believe that added to just like that, I don't know, you pick up a lot of people's sorrows through this type of work, separating that from your personal life. That's been the journey. And so far, again, through all the blessings that I've been given, now it's seeming that I'm able to get a hold of that to actually, if you will, just put it into a way that works for me and for others. Any type of experience that I've had before myself, I could share that with anybody else. And again, you live vicariously through these people's struggles, their pains, and what they share with you.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And I think, again, just being able to stay strong for them, because they're looking for a stone. So
yeah, man. No, you're absolutely right. And I mean, shout out to our brother Matt, man. I'm so glad that you're back, brother. You know, he always talks about the spoon and ladle analogy.
Yeah.
Where he says, like, we're always so busy emptying out our bucket, right, and helping other people. But it's also at that same time, like, we have to take that time as employees in this type of a field, whether it's this, any type of first responder field, you know what I'm saying? We got to take time to refill ourselves back up, you know what I mean? And that's a hard thing for some people.
Yeah, I guess, you know what I mean? And that's a skill in this line of work as well. And sometimes you don't learn it at first. Sometimes you feel like you're drowning, or you're swimming. But honestly, one of my favorite lyrics from Two Door Cinema Club even is, "You got to swim through a flood until you can stand."
And that
adds on to the one of my favorite quotes for Winston Churchill, which is, "If you find yourself in hell, just keep going."
Yeah.
And that's evident. Yeah, just please don't give up in that regard. Even when the going gets hard, that's where the time really matters.
Really,
put your whole heart into it.
Absolutely. And what is your title here, brother? What do you do?
Yeah, I'm an IOP coordinator. So I help facilitate, again, any type of appointments with POs, attorneys, anything as far as mitigating types of court documentation for court sentencing.
Dope.
Right? So, yeah, sending motions to the court to get cases squashed, as well as, again, helping facilitate the programs over here as far as the treatment for RSS groups, as well as therapist one-on-ones. We're just a glorified executive assistant for for the campus.
No, that's good though. So if you have a client that has like a criminal record or just a lot of mess in his life that he's having a hard time navigating, and what up, Ray? Shout out to Ray. You know, somebody who's just going through a hard time, you guys help facilitate with getting all that organized and making them feel a little bit more confident when they leave.
Correct. Yep. And we break it up so it's compartmentalized, so it's not so overwhelming for the individual when they do come in. We'd like to spend the 30 days that they do come in for them just to get assessed to the situation, make some friends, and get used to this this type of process, if you will. And then during that time, we'll help them with EBT if they're really financially struggling, if they don't have any types of financial status for food or any type of housing stuff, if you will, or even hygiene. We can assist with that.
That's really cool.
Yeah, and then the coming 60 days, that's when we really start to hone in on where they're going to go for treatment afterwards. And then we start thinking about in their 90 days or whatever for a discharge, if they need to go to a sober living environment, if we can get them a subsidized housing environment or anything else that might be fitting their needs there. It is a lot of work, but evidently we're just there as a tool for our participants. Then they do amazing things.
That's great, man. I mean, I can only imagine being in that type of a situation where you feel like, I always use that analogy from the Jungle Book where King Louis holding on to that pillar as his whole like foundation is breaking down. You know, to be at that part of your life mentally where you don't know what to do, and then to come into a facility like this and to have people like yourself and everyone else on your team that's willing to help, that's got to take a huge weight off of people's shoulders. Bro.
Yeah, yeah. And then again, that goes inside of one of my goals that I had when I was leaving my last stint in jail, unfortunately, which hopefully will be the last.
this sound familiar?
Yeah, I know. Oh, man. Unfortunately, it's a little traumatizing, that sound.
I'm all sit down, dog. Yeah. Take a break.
Right? Yeah. Even if I have to talk to the police, sometimes I just get very. I get so.
Dude,
sweaty,
I feel you. Even when I'm doing nothing wrong.
Right. Nothing wrong. You know, I mean, we're just having a normal conversation. You could even just talking about it, my speech speeds up. I know, like, or I'll just start doing the Southern drawl. I do that a lot when I'm talking to authority figures. I'm not even lying. I don't know what it is. It's like I watch football. I go to church. I do everything.
I'm an American.
Exactly. Yep. I ain't doing nothing wrong. And before that, actually, it was using a British accent because I get so nervous back in college.
For real?
I know. Yeah. And that's one thing I wanted to add as well. I think that adds into like, I wasn't comfortable being myself at that time.
Wow, bro. That's awesome.
I know. One of my best mates, actually, is from London.
That's really cool.
Yeah, cheers. I know. Yeah, and that's the thing. During that time, it's kind of ridiculous, but that adds into my, I don't know, I believe my addiction just, I kind of spiraled out of control inside of college. I was really trying to fit in there. Right after high school, I was my Mr. Popular kind of guy.
Yeah.
Going into college, it's a totally different experience. It's more of like financial status, like how much does your dad make kind of thing. At least at the U of A, in order to get into the fraternities, you had to have status quo or what have you.
Okay.
Yeah, or apply for them and to do the runs and all that. It was money to go in. I had frat buddies, if you will, but that wasn't the connections and all that stuff that you get from the fraternities, if you will. You only get, I got the addictions. I got, you know what I mean, and the other stuff, all the other crazy stuff that we were doing. Because Adderall was going rampant around the U of A campus.
Oh, dude, that was my thing.
Right, and that's the thing. It was just so easy to go to anybody on the campus and be like, hey, man, you know what I mean? You got that Adderall. It's going to help me out with my homework. It felt at that time was that limitless drug, Matthew McConaughey. You could keep drinking and not stop.
That's real.
Yeah. And that's the thing, yeah. It was just kind of like that thing on the U of A campus. It was just that undertone. The majority of people there were, if they were doing success, they were most likely on Adderall, or at least that was the myth. That was going around, that, you know what I mean, you need to get your hands on the Adderall, dude, if you're in college. And again, because I was prescribed it at a time, I found this doctor. He didn't seem like he was a legit doctor, to be honest with you. He seemed like he printed out his MD on the internet kind of thing.
You met him in like 22nd the park.
It's just a crazy little suite off of like Broadway, you know what I mean? Like this real little rinky-dink suite that it looked like it was just being rented just to be torn down, you know what I mean? Like, oh yeah, come over for a photo shoot and then you go missing kind of thing.
Yeah,
yeah, that's how I... that's funny. Yeah, so evidently this gentleman was my doctor. He couldn't speak very good English, but he was an Indian man and he helped me out with getting Vyvanse, actually. He got me like, what is it, 80 milligrams of Vyvanse. I didn't realize it at the time what I was doing to myself, but rewiring the chemistry inside my brain, all the chemicals. And that's what we really focus on over here as well inside of CDIOP, which is the Chemical Dependency Intensive Outpatient Program.
Yeah.
Because again, we don't realize how much damage we're doing to our brain in like a chemistry way. And with all the chemicals imbalanced inside your brain, you'll wake up in the morning some days and just not want to get up. You'll see staring at the ceiling fan. It's reminiscent of that cocaine after all withdrawal, if you will.
Yeah, yeah.
And unfortunately, I did dabble with that as well throughout college. Again, just during parties. It was a social thing. They'd just be like, hey, I got this crazy Scarface drug. You know what I mean? Well, try it out. And of course, you're reluctant at first, but everybody else that's doing it is of status. They've got, they're cooler. They got the cool cars. They've, you know, and again, especially in that frat environment, I guess I was subjugated to just more of that. You know what I mean? You're grown into this this momentum of using drugs just to connect with people, if you will.
Well, let's go back a little bit, because I'm very curious, man. I know you said that you started dabbling when you were in college. Did you have any issues with substance abuse, like in high school, elementary school, anything like that?
I would say, unfortunately, so. But again, it was just more of a social thing, just to hang out with the cool kids. I always wanted to, I'd say, just become that popular person, not really have any problems having, you know what I mean, friends. Or like girlfriends or anything, relationships.
Yeah.
And part of that was becoming edgy, per se. Taking random drugs from random kids or what have you. Like other kids wouldn't take a pill or whatever. It might have been stolen from their mother's cabinet. And a bunch of boys would go in the bathroom and just start doing pills. And this was like in seventh grade was when I was introduced to drugs, really. I started smoking marijuana with my friends. And again, just skateboarding, just trying to fit in.
And how old are you, brother?
I'm 26.
26. Yes. Okay, so we're not too far apart. I'm 35. So very similar. It's only just like a few years difference there. So even before we go into this, because I really want to start from the beginning, dog. Yeah. I'm very, very curious. Yeah. Growing up, did you have both your parents and stuff living in the house?
Yeah, actually. And I'm blessed to have had my parents there. I guess the family situation is kind of it's a giant, oh man, that should be its own kind of envelopment, if you will. because my father, he has a myriad of military history, if you will. He's done his 20 years in the Air Force, and then he joined the NSA, and then That's did some awesome. Other secret squirrel stuff I don't even know about. And I, the only thing that we do know about is that he had a second family, I guess, in Colombia, uh-huh. which we'll get there. But
okay,
all right. And that's something that we didn't find out until later on. And I think that also added to I just want to forget about everything.
Yeah.
I grew up in Japan, actually. I was born in Alamogordo, New Mexico, right next to the Trinity, where the Trinity test site, where the first nuclear bomb was tested, right next to Los Alamos. I know, it's kind of weird.
Cool, dude. That's crazy.
I was actually planned as a child, because my father was going to be stationed in Saudi Arabia, and apparently at the time you were going to be paid to have sons, and like the amount of sons that you had, you'd be paid by their government for having. So my father thought we were going to be stationed in Saudi Arabia, playing me up. However, his orders changed, and we were actually moved to Fusa, Tokyo, out there in Yokota Air Force Base. That's where I stayed until I was about 8 years old.
Wow, so, that's awesome. And your mom was a stay-at-home mom?
Yes, stay-at-home mom, but she also worked at the Air Force Base as well, at the Child Development Center. It was the CDC. It's kind of funny. Not the Center of Disease Center, but
Disease. Yeah. Yeah.
No, yeah, she worked at the CDC. It was a Child Development Center, and that took the majority of my life, if you will. For my mother worked in that for the majority, if you will, until the latter parts, until I reached about eighth grade and some things broke out, if you will.
Wow. And were you an only child?
No, I actually got two older brothers as well. So, I got bullied a little bit when I was growing up, but, it was probably just them taking out their frustrations as we moved a lot when we were growing up. However, I got the benefit of just moving to Japan. That was it. And then I moved over here. This is when my father retired at Tucson Air Force Base.
Wow. Japan, dude, that must've been really cool. How was the experience of that growing up?
It's amazing. I think it helped out make a lot of friends, cause they were like, oh, this guy, you know what I mean? He's a Mexican guy, but he came from Japan. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Most of the kids I was growing up with, it's at least when I was transferred over here in second grade or what have you, they didn't believe me. I felt like an outcast, at least trying to make friends, because trying to tell them that I came from Japan, it was just, it sounded like I was just making things up. However, when I did have friends come over to my house, it was all kind of verified. Then they'd vouch for me.
Wow.
Yep. However, again, it was a blessing. I've gotten a lot. There's a lot of respect out there, if you will, just being polite. That goes a long way.
Did you speak? So, you speak the language?
No, not at all. I grew up on the Air Force Base, so it was very much more American cultured. I didn't know what America looked like on a map. I thought America was in the shape of Arizona.
Wow.
When I was growing up, I thought, you know what I mean, because my father got the orders to move over to America, and I was so excited. I was telling everybody, because I had not been to America since I was born. It was this amazing thing. I was like, I'm finally going home. I don't even know what it is, but it's home. There's a desert, I hear. I don't know what that looks like. And lo and behold, when I got here again, making friends was a little tough. It was hard. I mean, as a military brat, and especially this being your last stop, but you don't know that. You know what I mean? You're reluctant to even try to reach out to friends because you're thinking maybe they're not even going to be there when I have to move, and I don't want it to be so sad.
Yeah.
However, I quickly adapted to Tucson culture. It's very easy. I love America in that regard. That's it's you're never too far away from a friend in need, if you will.
Man, even at a young age. That's so cool, dude. I mean, we can go down this rabbit hole. It's crazy to me because on YouTube, right? I'm a huge YouTube consumer. Like, I love watching content from all over the world. And I ran into this weird rabbit hole where different people from America will show. Well, they will share their experiences of what it was like for them to move to other countries and what to expect and all of these things. And this one woman, I saw people from, you know, Saudi Arabia moving to Mexico talking about how the culture, and I saw Americans moving to Japan talking about all the culture. And it was just so, it was so cool to hear. They're like, you know, you got to learn the language first, understand there's a complete culture shock. It is a complete different world. I mean, dude, I was born and raised here, and my experience, I mean, I've been to the East Coast a little bit. I've been to the West Coast, but I've never left the country other than like Mexico. So I can only imagine it's a completely different world.
Right. Yeah, it was a culture shock for sure. And I guess as soon as I moved here, I got homesick. You know what I mean? I thought, yeah, Japan is the home. As much as I, you know what I mean? It took me until my adulthood really to accept, like, I love the place where I ended up. You know what I mean? Tucson is my home. And especially now, I'm the cowboy hat toting kind of guy.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? This is this place found me kind of thing.
That's cool. Yeah. Dude.
And that's the beauty, because growing up, a lot of people just wanted to leave. And I think that was kind of the escapism, as well as all the cool kids that I wanted to hang out with. They were just like, they're so done with their families, the environment. They didn't want to be in Tucson anymore. So I think a part of that that substance abuse was just that escapism.
Yeah. And just curious, I mean, we could take this out if you want. I'm just curious, like, your father, I can tell because of what you said about him that he's probably a very, very intelligent man, a very, very smart man. Was he pretty, like, I don't know, man. I mean, because I see so many stories about people, and a lot of them come from military families, you know? And I think when you're involved in heavy things like that, it's very hard for you, especially for a man, to kind of be open and to have that ladle bucket type of mentality where they're able to, you know what I mean? Like, does that make sense what I'm asking?
Of course, and this is what I bring up in my work as well, especially with a majority of our participants that come through, especially the military division. It's mental health is not really cycled in on. I mean, again, they're working on trying to get the, you know what I mean, mental health a little bit more prominent in the military, but it's seen as cowardice. You know what I mean? For the majority of the time there, it was always seen as, you know what I mean? And beyond the military, just for men in general, not being able to just deal with your problems per se.
Yeah.
Just to eat it, soak it up, and just sit there and stew in your...
Until you die.
Yeah, right? And then that's where the dad, you know what I mean, comes from. You know what I mean? Just the exhale. I do that sometimes. And I'm like, why am I doing that? I mean, like, you know what I mean? Yeah, it's just like, yeah, you're just exhaling that excess pressure. You got a lot of things going on in your mind. And a lot of guys, especially a lot of like men our age, you know what I mean? Especially... Even throughout the adolescence, they're kind of hammered home, like, just eat it, just suck it up. It makes you stronger. It's part of character. But all that, you know what I mean? It's just little rocks, and then you get a cherry on top, you might explode. We see that a lot. I think about, again, I think about all these horrible things that have happened with, like, the shootings, if you will, active shootings and all that, especially with mental health. They were demonstrating signs of isolation. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Their mind starts getting into this way of, like, for certain, you know, I mean, active shooters or what have you, it was talking about the incel ideology of women are evil. There's nobody that's there to help you. And they get centered on that. And I feel it all starts in their environment, if you will, for mental health of men. It's kind of crazy. But again, I bring this up to my participants because it's important. And again, especially with the guys this age, and especially in our society, especially with social media, it's always blown out of proportion. Like, and with, I believe, a lot of things that have happened in the past few years with the political movements and all that.
Yeah.
It's been a little scary for the majority of for men, if you will, as far as mental health.
Yeah.
You got absolutely. A lot of guys out. I got myself asking, am I okay mentally?
Yeah.
Which is a good question to ask yourself. And I think it's important to ask your male colleagues or your male peers out there, how are you doing? Because that could go a long way. And most of them will say, oh, I'm doing great.
Absolutely. But it's also too, like, I think it's a fine, like, I think we're all, especially with COVID and all these crazy things that have happened in the last few years, it's like we're all kind of like on the edge constantly, right? So mental health and having a grip on it is not necessarily being in this perfect state of mind.
No, yeah.
But a lot of it is, hey, I'm not doing good. I'm going to talk about it. If you're not doing good, you talk about it. And then we're going to find that peace within each other of being able to open up and communicate, right?
Yeah. And sometimes it takes time. It really does take time to open up to even to yourself. I've realized like, oh man, I always thought I had it figured out. And then I figured out, you know what I mean? Man, I was in a little bit of a denial there.
Yeah.
Especially when I was going down my bender of drinking. I just, you know what I mean? Would start to not tell anybody about where I was going. Telling them, yeah, I'm going to do more hours at work, but I'm actually at the bar. Just down and down my sorrows, if you will. Yeah, because growing up, you know what I mean? You hear as men, you know what I mean? Men don't cry, men drink. Or, you know what I mean? Something around those lines. You'll find something else. And whether it be the gym or the bar or what have you, it's still there. And I think you still need to talk about it with somebody.
Yeah, yeah man. No, for sure. And you know, and going back to, you know, you moving here to the United States, I've always used this analogy, and I'm curious if this is something that you agree with, you know, but I always use the analogy of a plant, right? If you uproot a plant constantly and repot it, it doesn't grow as much. You know, the leaves wither, you know, the plant does not grow to its full potential. So it's important to nourish the soil of the plant to allow it to grow to its full potential.
Right.
And I feel as human beings, we're the same way. Constantly uprooting our families and moving to different countries. I think there's a sense, like you said, with the friendships, and it's hard to make friends. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, of course. Of course. Yeah, most definitely. And it brings you to almost that philosophical question, you know what I mean? If you take apart a boat and you put some new things on it, is it the same boat? You know what I mean? Put the new material on it. But you see, and that's it's I don't know, it's kind of like an augment or an enigma of society right now. And I'm happy that we're honing in on mental health. I just it's been a long time coming, if you will.
Yeah.
And especially again, bringing back to military, because my brother, he's an Army Ranger. He's been recently diagnosed with PTSD. He always kind of knew it was there. And unfortunately, my father-in-law had passed away as well. He was also in the Army, but he didn't get any medical disability benefits because he solely believed that it belonged to the men that were there with him or the ones that died.
Yeah.
He felt unworthy to get his to get medical benefits or anything like that, to get any kind of medical things discharged or what have you. And again, it just adds, and he served in Vietnam. The majority of our veterans out there, again, they kind of feel that way, that they owe their comrades, their past comrades, their deceased comrades, the majority of what they, you know, I mean, have been through. And that's a lot of pressure to hold on themselves. And it leaks out into their family, too.
Absolutely.
And it's been my long journey. I would like to join the military. My full focus was joining the Air Force as well, kind of following my father's footsteps, but doing special warfare. That was the plan before right before that March 23rd incident when I was just recently arrested.
Wow.
For DUI.
I think it's very interesting, too, how, like you said, you know, you have this goal of what you want to do. And as a faithful man, right, I truly believe, like, we make plans and God laughs, right? So it's like you said, this DUI, it completely shifted your thought process, at least for now at this point. And we're going to get into that. What I wanted to ask you was, you know, as far as academics, things like that, going to school, I can only assume by the way that you speak and the way that you present yourself that you did pretty good in school.
Actually not. No, actually.
Really?
Yeah, I dropped out in senior year of college.
Okay. And, yeah, babe, you made it to college,
right,
though,
yeah,
dog.
Yeah, right, yes.
Take it from a person who failed eighth grade, right? And then I dropped out of high school and didn't get my diploma until I was almost 21. So, like, for me, that's pretty damn good. Well, like, you even made it to a university.
And I guess that's one thing that hit me hard is it's not a race. And that's what I've tried to find out over these times, because I've seen my buddies graduate. Well, you know, I mean, I should have been there on that stage with them, if you will.
Yeah,
and during college, I know a lot of people were not being academically truthful, if you will, or forthcoming. A lot of, even my buddies, and I shouldn't, you know what I mean? I'm not going to say their name, but they even, they used, you know what I mean, AI to pass their tests because it wasn't being doctored correctly.
Dude, that's crazy.
Yeah, so a lot of people just slipped by and got their degrees during that time. I just ran out of money. I was spending it too much on that lifestyle, if you will. And that's the thing. It was unfortunate. I did have a falling out there. And I think that's where my cyclical nature, if you will, of habitual substance abuse started, because I just wanted to forget that at that moment, I felt like a failure. I felt like I couldn't live up to my father's expectations, my parents.
Yeah, it's hard. It's hard. Are you seem to be a very structured person in the sense, like, you probably have routines that you follow and you're religious with those routines.
Yeah, and that was actually even that was compounded inside of jail as well. You find out, like, a lot of these guys that are from different walks of life, some of them unfortunately are there for murder, you know what I mean, capital murder or what have you. And This comes back to just, you know, I mean, that routine, if you will. The only thing that we really, I that really stuck out to me was the Bible studies that we'd have over there, and that really just hits me hard.
Yeah,
because it's like what you're playing off of. But Einstein said, and I quote, "God does not play dice."
Yeah.
So, and again, that came from Einstein, and it just blows my heart into pieces just to think that, you know, I mean, at that moment, these guys they could be belligerent throughout the whole entire day, but at this one moment. At 9 o'clock, right before it was lights out, we'd all get in a circle. And then during that moment, we were family.
Yeah.
And I think that was just, that was critical to me, to find out you're not alone in this.
Yeah, absolutely. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and at one of my favorite things that I learned inside of jail as well, actually, it came from one of a gentleman that was going to prison. He had a daughter, and he was talking to her on the FaceTime.
Just in case.
Yeah, oh, thank you.
I got you, bro.
Yeah, cheers. It's just, I learned a lot during that stay. And this gentleman told me you should be grateful for what you have right now, that present moment. It is a present. Because, I've seen people that get shot in the butt and die. And I've seen people that get shot in the head and live.
Yeah.
So it's, you know what I mean? You take what you got every moment and make the most of it. And during that time, again, during that stay, I saw a lot of people that normally wouldn't even be friends. They wouldn't got talking to each other. From an Aryan skinhead talking to, you know what I mean, a big black man that, you know what I mean, they easily, off the charts, you'd probably think they'd get into it. But here they are, you know what I mean, holding each other and embracing each other in the name of God, in the name of Jesus. So, I don't know.
That's beautiful, man.
Yeah, it blew my mind. And again, it brought me back to, like, why I'm here, what's my goal? And yeah, I'd like to join the military. That's still a goal of mine. I feel like I'm not done here, though. I need to help out with preventing recidivism. What I can do to share with other people, at least to not follow down the same steps as me, or let them know that it's okay to fall. It's just a slip. It's about how you get back up.
Yeah, no, for sure, man. And dude, so powerful. I mean, going into what you said, so you went through the high school, you did this and that, I know you said that you had started smoking weed when you were like in middle school, high school.
Yeah.
Did it help calm your brain down? Like, did it allow you to kind of like relax for a little bit?
For sure. Actually, it calmed down the nerves and all that. Again, during that time as well, there was a lot of the screamo music. You know what I mean? It was getting down the emo stuff. So a lot of my
That's
other
good shit, dude.
Yeah, right? It is. Yeah. The only like downfall of that too is just like that scene of like, you know what I mean? The emo cutting and the self harm. I guess this was just another route of that because I had my flippy hair. We used to iron my hair to make it look like I had that white kid, super cool.
Oh,
emo, yeah.
Because tonight, yeah, will be the
exactly.
Night.
I'd be like, oh my gosh, yeah, flip my hair. Yeah, I tried to do that, but instead of self harm in that regard, I would just smoke weed, and I felt like in that regard, it was practically the same thing, nurturing that pain. The only reason I'd smoke weed or what have you is just due to like family arguments or whatever. During that time, my father's alcoholism was out of control.
And that's the thing that we really try and paint here and to allow people to see is all walks of life struggle with generational curses, right? You know, a little bit earlier in the story, we're talking about how your dad is this high ranking military person that's doing all of these things. That's a lot of pressure. The mental health is not talked about a lot. And, you know, because of the, the standards that your parents raised you with and wanting you to be successful academically, that puts a lot of pressure on you too.
Yeah.
You know, and there's just a lot of unhealing in any type of an environment. It doesn't matter what type of walk of life you come from.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. You know, and that's what I want to drive home to. It's just, you could be from anywhere, any type of walk of life. Your story matters. Your pain does matter. Just because, you know what I mean? You could be well off in this other type of situation doesn't mean that you hurt less.
Yeah.
And again, there's things that people don't see on the outside, and you can get real good at hiding it, but that's not healthy. You need to talk to it about people.
It's hard to open up.
Even then, like, I remember getting caught with weed my first time, and my parents went all out. They took out my carpet. They removed my door. I didn't have a mattress. I had to earn it all back. Yeah,
how old are you?
That was 14.
14.
Yeah, 14. Oh, yeah. Yeah, go through the whole military experience. Yeah, get on your knees, put the hands behind your back, and then get whipped by the electrical cord.
Oh, man.
Yeah, because my parents are old-fashioned. They're like very much that ancient like way, that traditional Mexican kind of. And what I would reminisce in is probably like traditional like Indian Chinese parents.
Yeah.
It's just like high expectations. You're our hope. If you don't put us in like the most beautiful $1 million retirement home, you have failed us, son.
Dude, it's really, really a struggle for a lot of people. I see those high expectations are so hard to live up to those standards, you know? And I also understand as a parent too myself that you want your kids to do better than you. And I think a lot of that stems from the mistakes that we make when we're coming up. But there is a fine line of having the kids respect it and then going completely against everything that you're doing. And you know what I mean? And I think that's where a lot of those lines get blurred.
Yeah, and it was a delicate dance, if you will, that it was more of like a, it was a delicate dance that turned into like more of a rodeo, if you will, at times. It was a, and that's the thing. I was the bull per se, and my parents were the person holding on.
Yeah.
And again, that's where really the lies and just deceit started, just not telling my parents where I was going to be. I'd be at soccer practice. Really, I was just smoking weed.
Yeah.
Or I'd show up to every one or here practice or so. But in a sense, I felt like it was normal because I felt like my family in itself was hiding things from each other. Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I felt like every family's the same in that, bro.
Right. Yeah. So it just felt like, well, you know what I mean? My dad's overseas. He could be doing Lord knows what. And my mother, she loves bingo. She's got like this huge gambling thing. Yeah. So I'd be left home alone a lot.
Yeah.
So my brothers, they'd be doing all these other things with their friends. I guess that was the majority of my life in the beginning part. I used to be scared of going into my own home alone. I used to, because it would be too dark in there. Mm-hmm. I remember back in Japan as well, actually. I this was one of the stories. I was playing outside, and I smashed a bamboo stick against a wall. I got bamboo pieces in my eyes. Ooh. And I had to wait for my brother to come home. Oh, I was just sitting there an hour or two crying. And my brother finally showed up. He was like, what's wrong with you? Why are you crying? And we went to the hospital. I got injured a lot throughout my childhood.
Yeah. Hey, that's what we do.
Yeah, right.
Uh-huh. Man, so, yeah, no, I still do. I think there's still things that come. My wife and I have recently a lot of trauma that I didn't even remember that has, you know, surfaced and stuff as I've gotten older. And I have, you know, I got to thank Ark for that, man. And Mike and everyone for putting this on. Cause I mean, being around healing all the time allows you to really uncover a lot of shit in your life, you know, and there's no shame in it. There's no shame, you know? But it's amazing how parents, family, you know, without even realizing it, because those conversations of mental health were not there. If you don't handle the responsibilities, you check out.
Yeah.
And that's what it seems like to me as a third party hearing what you're saying is your family was, you know, under stress. You guys all lived together. You guys were good, but there's that stress of not being able to open up about what we're experiencing and checking out.
Right. And during that time as well, I think my brother was going through the hardest, if you will, my middle brother, because he was going between schools during a difficult time. He was drinking in Japan. He was caught smoking cigarettes. That's where oh man, that was a brutal like torture technique my dad did on him. And I had to watch. It's just how my dad did things back in the day. Just kind of like, here, watch what happened if you do so. And I always remembered my dad telling me he'd shoot me in the head like a dying cow if he found me using drugs. Yep. Which wasn't the case, but he'd go the extra measure just to go super military man. And again, I think that started to tone down after he was diagnosed with cancer. He's secret squirrel guy. I don't know, you know what I mean, but I'm pretty sure that he's been legit diagnosed. He does go to the VA for that to get treatment, and but his whole attitude about life kind of changed at that moment. Just like, oh man, like my whole life is, you know what I mean, here I should be proud of my family in that regard. And we've had a better relationship after we've just discussed these things. As I grew older, I just realized we got to confront this or it's gonna blow off the top. I don't want to be, you know what I mean, not talking to my father, because I've heard those stories, man, and that just breaks my heart. I hear it very often, actually, from some of our participants over here. It just rocks my world.
Yeah, man.
And and again, everyone has their problems. I remember those days. My father would just get belligerently drunk, and he would hold me on his lap, and we would watch gore videos. We would just watch constant beheadings, all sorts of evil that humans can do to each other.
Yeah.
I remember that would always be like a Friday or a Saturday night as I grew up. And I would just watch with my father, just various gore videos. Again, maybe that was a residual thing that just stuck with me for a long time.
Yeah, I always tell my kids, you need to be very careful about what you see, because you can always you can never unsee what you've done. You know, I was one of those kids, like when you said like that, the music and stuff that you were listening to back in the day. My buddy, man, his dad was into military, and that's what we would do. Rotten.com.
Yeah, exactly.
And I think, you know, as it's just another thing as a parent. I think, you know, when you're in that type of line of work, you want your kids to see what's really out there because you don't want them to be surprised by anything, you know. But once again, there's a fine line of that.
My father meant well, and that's the thing. But he would just fall asleep after being so drunk, and I'd be like stuck in his arms.
Yeah.
I remember, like, my brothers would have to come home and save me from it. I'd just be crying.
Yeah. and it's crazy. Like, I was victim of that too, bro. Same type of thing, watching all these Faces of Death videos and stuff, thinking that it was cool. And there's shit that I wish I never would have seen.
Yeah, no, I guess it's more of just a morbid curiosity. Yeah. You know what I mean? It's just something that just stuck with me, unfortunately. You know what I mean? It just comes on the internet sometimes and you'll see it, but it's just like the atrocities of what's going on right now. And maybe at the time I shouldn't have exposed myself to such, because you know what I mean, telling my friends at school, it was not a good thing to be talking about in general, at like the age of like 12 or what have you, or, you know what I mean? But furthermore, again, and that's just how my family was. They were just very edgy in that regard. They meant well. It's just sometimes it was just lost in that communication or lost in that translation.
Yeah, man. It is what it is, man. And all families are very, very similar in that sense. You know, we all have our little quirks and little things like that. My wife and I were just having this conversation this morning. But, you know, it's ultimately love is what definitely speaks over anything else. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
We all have our issues. But as long as we come back, like you said, at the end of the day, being able to be grown and have those conversations means...
Yeah, just bounce back, man.
It's a huge difference, dude.
It helps, again, with even situations like anybody that else has been through that situation. I mean, I couldn't fathom being exposed to that like firsthand while you're a child, but it you know what I mean, like right there, it just makes me think of the other side of the world too, you know what I mean, especially what's going on right now.
So sad.
And that's another reason why I just wanted to join up. The elderly, the children that are involved in this, they shouldn't be there.
No, for sure, dude. And we're gonna go into the purpose that God has put you into right now in a little bit, but I wanted to go into like the college years, man. What was your initial major?
Yep. So I actually went in there for computer science. And so I guess this is a huge point as well, actually. Going into computer science, the math department at the U of A was not the best, if you will.
Wow.
Because they had teacher students leading most of the programs for the early math, if you will. And even the higher education math, like vector calculus and all that, were being taught by student teachers. So they have a lot of other things that they're worrying about. Grading and teaching you how to do it step by step. Not one of them, if you will. Yeah. Then they'll have a teacher's assistant do all the grading or what have you. But furthermore, I was really struggling during that first year in college. I didn't know what I was doing. The majority of my classes were like hieroglyphics to me. It seemed that you needed to be well prepped and prepared for this for these classes, these courses, if you will. So I felt like I was a fish out of water kind of thing.
Yeah,
I remember going to my coordinator at that time and crying to her and telling her, I can't do this, man. Like this has been my dream, and this blows my mind. You know what I mean? Because at the time I wanted to work on video games, and honestly, maybe just be voice acting or something like that. That was my great escape. That was the thing that like really took my mind away when I didn't have to use substances. Playing video games and all that to get my. And again, it was. I don't know. It's kind of dumb to say, but I had idols inside of said video games or something like for Solid Snake from Metal Gear Solid.
Heck yeah,
because. A strong, stoic kind of guy. I don't even know why I would get emotional about this, but it's just like that. You know what I mean? Like,
as a gamer, bro, I get it completely, yeah, man. Like I mean, it's like an escape. I try to explain to my wife because she's like, she always says, you know, people back in the days, they would always say the book is better than the movie, right?
Right.
We were having a conversation how nowadays sometimes the game is better than the movie and the book because it allows you to be in the character and it allows you to feel the emotions and meet the people. Yeah, so like it's a whole different world out there.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the thing I could talk about all day as well, like from Master Chief to like Kratos. It's just those like that strong that like
Matt looks like Kratos. Next time you see him, he looks like Kratos.
I'm honestly kind of scared to talk to Matt sometimes. Yeah, a little. Oh man, but yeah, that's the thing. You know what I mean? I don't know. Just like that. You know what I mean? You do it even though no one's looking because it's the right thing to do, and you don't need a story printed about you.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And in that regard, that's what I try to live my life by. You can do the Secret Squirrel stuff. You don't need to be having your whole parade or what have you. It's more of like a Navy SEAL Green Beret kind of ideology.
Yeah.
Like you were there, but nobody needs to know you were there. You just did the right thing, and that's the right thing to do.
Absolutely.
And again, if no one's watching, God is, or you know what I mean, whatever we want to call the universe or what have you, you will. It'll come back around.
Absolutely.
You just spread that love, man.
Absolutely, so. Man. So, I mean, back to the college, you were just, like you said, it was not what you expected.
Yeah, it was so overwhelming. Again and again, beyond trying to make friends, I was really focusing on my schoolwork there, and I was just failing tremendously.
Well, were you... Would you consider yourself an addict at that time, or did you develop into one because of trying to live to those standards?
Yeah, I believe it. The uplift, yeah, the accomplishments and all that. Again, just trying to hinder those emotions. You'd go over to your friend's house after a midterm that went south, and of course they'd offer you some type of substance or what have you, whether it be a beer, a joint, some cocaine. It's just college days, and then you talk about it, but you wouldn't do anything to rectify the issue. You just talk about the problem, and honestly, just exemplifying it. You're almost like manifesting a bigger one, and you know what I mean. Today, I'll leave my course to go do some various drugs so I can forget about the bad grade that I got instead of working on bettering myself or getting help.
Yeah,
that was my MO at the time.
Yeah,
and then I switched my major to art, actually, to music.
You've always been a creative person. I can tell
that's
that.
The thing. And again, I think it was just more of the environment as well. I remember going into the music school of U of A, and I had prepared a song that I wrote myself to sing. And usually you'd go in there with like with actual sheet music.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And perform in front of like it's a board of professors there, and they're all like super elegant and all that. I just remember being super shy, very nervous. And one of the people said like, "Oh, you're not going to perform like a classical piece or whatever, like this is your own song." Like, yeah, but somehow I did all right. I passed that entrance exam into the School of Art, and I started. Unfortunately, though, it wasn't conducive to what I thought it was going to be, if you will. And then again, I had multiple people on multiple fronts telling me, "What are you doing? It's not a lucrative skill. You can't find any jobs with an art degree." You know what I mean? So on and so forth. And that's,
you know, what's funny, it's crazy, as a, you know, somebody listening into your story, it really is, there's a dichotomy with what you were doing as far as like working what your major was at that point, because I mean there's a structure, you have to be well prepared, like you said, for these classes, you have to get your shit in order to be successful, right? And then you have the opposite end of the spectrum, which is the art, because to me it makes perfect sense. If I'm sitting there and some guy comes in and has the confidence to sing his own song, hey, art, there's no one way to paint a picture, right? Yeah. Art it's a completely different thought process when it comes to that way.
Yeah, and I think that really honed it in. I felt like a lot of the people that I was surrounded at the music school were just more of like that band orientated. Again, like they went through the whole process of going to their band groups, and when they were in high school, middle school, they're very immersed into this life of sheet music.
Yeah.
Yeah, classical. There wasn't more of that exposure to your own mind, if you will. Yeah, you could compose music, but it couldn't be like a trap beat. It couldn't be a rock song or anything. Yeah. You know what I mean? And there were these few classes that did hit those. Unfortunately, they were just like, they were gen eds, if you will. They weren't very in depth. And I felt like those classes couldn't be long enough, if you will. And you know what I mean? I just felt at that moment, I was between a rock and a hard place. I had no direction of where I was going there. I was working on my own music, but it was more of just a depressive, like, I don't belong here kind of thing. Yeah, it was more of an outlet there. And again, I would show my professors and stuff. They'd say it was great, but there would be no follow-up or anything. I felt like I was going nowhere. I would send my music into to certain places. I had one song played on KXCI, but they played it at a time that they said that they would, but they did it an hour earlier, so I wasn't able to hear it or whatever.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I guess at that time, I was just struggling to find myself. I felt like this dream that I had, like these multiple dreams, I started feeling more like a failure at that rate. Yeah. And it's hard to calculate and all that, but it's just, the myriad of things that were happening between drama, between friends and all the other stuff that was going on with my family.
Well, I'm sure, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm sure there was a general fear too of having to tell your family how you were feeling at that time.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. Cause at that point, I think they still thought I was in computer science. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Cause they didn't know that I switched my major. And again, this added to that fuel of just not being forthcoming with even my family at this rate. And I was living with them while going to college, and I'm just living this double life. It just felt
the people pleasing, man. Right, it's hard.
And that's the thing. Yeah, I was just like, oh yeah, it's going great. Yep, almost done with college, and then lo and behold, there was nearly nothing to show for there, and that's why my father was trying to hammer home military as well. And I thought about it, but on my own regard, I had thought about it previously. Just all the things that I owe this great country, and all the things I want to pay forward as well, but. At that moment, I did feel like an ultimate failure. I was smoking weeds. There was no way, if you will, I could have gotten in the military right off the bat there.
Wow.
So and I took it in on myself. I think that's where I started drinking a lot more, if you will. And before, actually, I used to be disgusted by the taste of alcohol. It used to make me want to puke, actually. I'd gag. And then come college, it just became like water for me.
Would you consider yourself a type A personality? Like pretty driven, like when it comes to doing certain goals, things like that?
Yeah, I'd say so, because I just want to rip the Band-Aid off, if you will. Just get. I don't like feeling like I'm out of compliance. I think I attribute that more to being on probation.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean? That's kind of like, I don't want to go back to jail, or I just want to get it all done so I don't have to worry about it later.
I also wonder too, because I mean, you're, like I said, you have a very unique energy about yourself. You know, you're a motivated person. I bet you could run like 10 miles nonstop, bro. And you know, so like, was that, what other things did you have at that time? Other than substances, were you ever able to shut your brain off and actually relax? Was that a hard thing for you to do growing up?
Oh, yeah, very difficult, especially through college. Again, at that constant feeling that you're behind, that you're failing, you're not telling anybody what's going on. You know what I mean? Not even your friends know what's, you know what I mean? Because they're in their different majors. They have no idea what you've been going through. And through the majority of high school, I was at it felt like I it was bread and butter. It was so easy for me to get through the majority of my classes. And here comes college. I just feel like I'm totally lost.
Yeah.
I don't even feel like I'm ready for this. Wow. But you feel like you're just being pushed through anyway. So without your, you know what I mean? And you just have to deal with it. Like coming back to the mental health thing again, like you just feel like this is where I'm supposed to be. This is, I better just get used to it and just suck it up. Something's going to happen in that regard. Evidently. Something did happen. COVID happened. I ran out of money as well. And then I just stopped going to class, if you will. I just couldn't afford this next semester. And then just started working a lot more. And that's where I started working at Rise with as a DSP, as a direct support professional, while I was going to school. But then I obviously didn't go to school that next semester. So I just started pulling full-time.
Working full-time.
Right, yeah. And then after that, I started working with a plethora of other places, like Arizona Autism, just with the college credits that I had. That was a lot as well. Unfortunately, I had a lot of children that passed away. You know what I mean? You'd get so close to them. Yeah, it's all good. It's just, I don't know. You'd go over to these people's houses, and especially on that type of job, you're one-on-one with their child. And that was an immense amount of responsibility. At least it felt to me that this was like the whole world on my shoulders, if you will. Like, this is someone's entire world. Sometimes I even didn't, I don't know, I just felt over secure, over protective at all times, just felt like a secret agent driving this child around. And then you find out like months later that they'd pass. And then, oh man, that just hit me hard. And I don't know how much more of I could have taken of that. I did switch jobs and I went to Child Family Support Services. And that is where I was working with.
Oh my God, that's gotta be hard, dude. Oh,
yeah, I know. It was just one after another. I started working with sexually trafficked children, actually, as well, and then just hearing their stories. Oh man, yeah, I think that's where I really started going to the bars after work, if you will. And during that time, I applied for a different position. Actually, this was my first time trying to go into the military. Actually, I had talked to a recruiter. I told him this is what I want to do. And honestly, all this stuff that was my backbone, if you will, I wanted to do it for all the, you know what I mean, the people that couldn't, if you will, and especially all the things that I've seen and heard, and just again hearing the children's stories. It just, oh man, like yeah,
I'm so sorry, dude. Yeah, I mean, If it's any consolation, brother, I truly do feel like, you know, going back to when you were talking about trying to navigate through your initial major and then switching majors and trying to navigate through that and just kind of being stuck in this in-between balance of like, where do I go from here? What is my purpose? I'm feeling like a failure, right? I truly do feel that's when God started working on you, brother. Like, you know what I mean? Whether the DUI was something that you see as a blessing or not, I feel like, you know, he has to prep you to put you into the positions that you need to. And the empathy and the sympathy that you feel for these people, to me at least, it shows that you're exactly where you need to be right now. Yeah, dude.
Thank you, Buddha. Honestly, it's been a long time coming. It was right after that. That's when I celebrated with my brother. And this is where my first DUI actually happened. This was in 2020 during the presidential debates. Felt like the world was exploding.
Fuck, dude. Yeah. Oh my God. That was, thank God that we are talking about this in the past tense, bro. That was fucking horrible.
It was awful. Yeah, absolutely awful. I think, and that brings me back to mental health again. I think the majority of our nation, or all over the world, we were all affected in some way, shape, or form. Isolation does a lot to you. And I've realized now, even after going to jail during their COVID lockdowns and all that, what it could do to a person, make or break, truly break. a person in that regard. And in that moment, I had just gotten the notice. I'm going to MEPS. I'm going to get sent out. I went out to go celebrate my brother. It was September 16th, 2020. Mm. We went out to this local bar, Los Pacos or something like that. I don't know. Yeah. It was just down the road, if you will. Just this normal like little drinking bar. It was kind of like a dive bar, if you will, of the neighborhood. We went out there and we started drinking. We drank with the owner. There was nobody out there. Nobody was going to be out to a bar during the height of COVID.
Yep.
Yeah, it was just during that time. And the streets were completely empty. It looked like a ghost town. It just added to that feeling of isolation.
Scary,
yeah,
man. It was so scary.
Yeah, my heart really did go out to like homeless population at that time. Before I even got enveloped with all that work, it was just like, man, you know what I mean? And you can't find anybody on the streets. How does that feel like even just being on the streets kind of thing? It just added to that, you know what I mean, not need a drink kind of thing. I went out with my brother. I had like 7 margaritas. We drank with the owner as well. The owner brought out some Mexican moonshine. And then evidently they told us that we had to get lost. It wasn't even closing time yet. And then I tried to get a Lyft and Uber. I tried to even call Tucson Taxi. Nobody was coming out. Nobody was going to offer. And you know what I mean? And then I was like, well, shoot, we got to get in the car. We got to go home, man. It's just a block away. So I got in my vehicle with my brother, completely smashed, not thinking about it at that moment, because I don't really remember much from that time. I just remember the test that the police were performing on me. And I remember my brother telling me to chug a whole bunch of water before they showed up. So as we were going down to the street, we were T-boned by another oncoming vehicle. I had called my insurance, and I do remember calling the police and all that to tell them like what happened. I got on my vehicle to go check on the other person. They said they were okay. And then the police arrived. And then they said that they weren't okay. And I told the police everything. I was so forthcoming, because at that moment, throughout my whole entire life, I always saw authority figures as like the ones that are going to save me. As long as you're truthful with them and 100%, you're going to be fine.
Yeah.
Man, did I not know just to shut up there. Dude, oh, man. Yeah, and that's how it is, though. Yeah, I told them exactly everything that transpired. I told them how many drinks I had. I told them that I had previously had a medical marijuana card. I told them everything, from the amount, and even the song that I was listening to. It was a one margarita. That song, I know, it's funny. Every time I hear that song now, it's like, oh man, flashbacks. And it's like, oh no, not one more margarita. No, yeah. No,
Margaritavilles for you in the future.
Exactly. I used to be a subject to that too. I used to go to Chili's and go and, you know what I mean? I'd make jokes like I wouldn't put my head underneath that margarita tap or whatever and just go, you know what I mean? And
dude, and it's really, so dude, really, man, you are not alone, dog. I have an uncle, shout out to him. I don't know if he ever listens, but he works with the forensics department in TPD, and he's been, I think he specializes in the child sex crimes.
Yeah.
And, you know, in that division. And I mean, dude, I know, I don't care if you're the most anointed person in the world, that type of line of work, especially being in the shit 24/7 and going home with it. And I mean, because unless you a completely heartless person, dog, you're going to go home with these stories, right?
Yeah.
I think it definitely changes people and it affects them. And dude, my heart goes out to you too, bro. And I'm going to add you to my prayer list for today, because it's obvious, you know, dude, hearing your story, you said that you tried to call an Uber and you tried to call a Lyft and there was just nothing around.
It was God's plan, man.
Bro, it was God's plan, brother, for real, man.
How it happened.
And my heart goes out to you for all the things that you've seen, dog, because I struggle with depression too, man. It's a rough one for me, and I know, you know, that's those thoughts that haunt you, especially when you're by yourself,
right? Yeah, and that, I think the craziest part about that was waiting a whole year. They didn't take me to jail that night. They let me go home
with really
my family. Yeah, they said, you guys feeling like taking them to jail? They were like, nope, okay, well, you can go home, buddy. And I was like, okay, awesome, because I was just so nice to them, if you will. I have the footage of the incident. I've got 3 different body cams from the officers, and yeah, it's kind of laughable actually looking at it now. Because they asked me if I'm allergic to anything. I said like hairy cats and caterpillars or something like that. And I said like, you guys don't have any of that in there, or do you? And then they were laughing. And I was a big fun, you know what I mean? But I had no idea what was in store for me at that moment. You know what I mean? Yeah. Afterwards, you know what I mean? I waited a whole year to get sentenced. I was sentenced on September 9th or 8th of September 2021.
Had you stopped drinking at this time?
Yeah, I did. Yeah, I didn't drink at all, and I wasn't even on probation yet. I was just so mortified by what just transpired. However, unfortunately, after being sentenced and being read what had to have happened and doing all of the prerequisites and all that stuff, where they put me on 5-year probation, standard probation, and this was a smoking gun deal, if you will. I was given the DUI. I had to pay the restitution as well, and I had a civil court case as well open with this person as well, because you know how it is with accidents; they want to get the most money. And if they hear that you have a court case or any type of police citation or anything, they're going to go for the throat. They're going to go for the guttural. And I understand it now. I guess it's in hindsight now, it's better that I do have all this litigious experience. It helps, again, with the most people that I talk to, if they've been through the same experience, if they're going through it right now, waiting on that DUI, because I know how horrible it feels after you get it. You feel the lowest of the low. You feel so like, how did this happen? Your vehicle's impounded. You have to go through the whole entire steps to get your life rectified. If your job finds out, you risk losing that as well.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what happened. The military was just waved goodbye at that moment. I had to work on myself again, just trying to get myself back in place, if you will, start working and getting places, getting my application out there. That's when I started working again with disabled adults and children. I first was working with CPES. Right as soon as they were going under, just because of COVID, a lot of nonprofit agencies and stuff suffered immensely. So a lot of those jobs and opportunities weren't actually available. But quickly after working for CPES and ARIES, working with disabled adults and children, I've worked with nearly all of those developmental places or agencies here in Tucson. It's kind of crazy to think about. I've hit almost every single one of them. And furthermore, after applying for that, I got accepted into doing this eviction prevention thing. And I did that for about a year during the COVID thing. So just keeping people's lights on if they were on life support or anything like that. Those ones hit me the hardest. If they had children or anything, they just couldn't afford to live during this time of not working. You know what I mean? COVID shut down the majority of their lives. Mm-hmm. So we helped pay out about $69 million or whatever to Tucson alone just for eviction prevention. That was a huge thing. But my drinking started again around that time. I wasn't being tested on probation anymore. I was doing what I was supposed to be doing. And this time I was getting into the military again. This was happening. I had all my ducks in a row, if you will. And then I just started working at Safe. So all of these other cocktail parties that were incited by like the places that I worked at and stuff. Like, I mean, it was kind of just always around. And again, majority of your coworkers and stuff were drinking and doing, you know, I mean, it was just kind of a way to network and get your name out there, especially with the head honchos. And that was just kind of my downfall. Because again, I wasn't being tested anymore. I thought I was going to get into the military. It was a sure shot thing. I'm just going to keep working until it's due time. And I picked up two full-time jobs, started working at Primavera Men's Shelter, and I started working at Southern Arizona AIDS Foundation as a statewide housing specialist.
Wow.
And yeah, working as a statewide housing specialist at Safe entailed, again, going across all of Arizona in my own vehicle to go and inspect all these other types of subsidized housing places, if you will, where we put people in subsidized housing, like Section 8 and all that, to check on their place and pretty much mark it off good for government work.
Wow. So,
and that was troubling. Some places that I went to, again, like you'd find a pipe on their chair or whatever, and I'd tell them, like, it's okay. It's all right. I'm not the police. But deep down inside, you're like, this person needs help. You know what I mean? Like, this is not conducive to living. You know what I mean? They have majority of their items in the bathtub or something. It's just not a place that is, you know what I mean, that's suitable for living, if you will. It's not a sober kind of like environment. You know what I mean? And then you'd have to tell their case manager. You'd literally have to go rat them out afterwards. It was just not a good feeling because you just felt like you were enabling their pain. Like you came over there, you said everything's going to be okay, but you're just a long arm. You know what I mean? And again, the houses that messed me up the most, I think it was one of the last ones that I went to, the last inspection I had. It was this family that's living right next to the U of A. It was, they were Ethiopian. They came down. And their whole entire house was infested with cockroaches, and they were sleeping on mattresses. They didn't have any furniture. They needed all the help they can get. I remember seeing they didn't have any pillows or sheets. All they had was Bibles.
Oh, my God.
And that, yeah, just shook my world. And to them, this was everything. This was the best thing they've had, you know what I mean, ever. And to me, it was not conducive to their experience. I worked my hardest to get them everything that they needed. And that was not in the job description, if you will. But
oh my God!
Yeah, man. Just again, I don't know. I just start thinking about people, and especially the children, because you deserve to be a kid. You need to be out there. You need to just, you know what I mean, please, you know what I mean, because it's, you only get that one chance. It's once you're our age or whatever, you could try to do the kid stuff, but it's probably going to make you look like Jeff Bezos renting out a whole entire Disneyland place for yourself. You know what I mean? And again, sharing those experiences, you know what I mean? I don't know. I think through this, through a long line of work, I can't help it but live vicariously through the person I'm helping.
No, absolutely. Yeah, I think that's part of the gift, dude. As much as sometimes it doesn't seem like a gift, it kind of feels like a curse. I think with every blessing that God gives you, there's a good and a bad that you have to be able to see both sides of that.
Yeah, and that, you know what I mean? And that brings me like to the thing. And I spiraled out of control. This, the second incident, the one that just happened this year, if you will, the one that I think changed my life, my whole entire view, because I was just slipping back in my old ways. I at the moment, during that time, I knew, like, in my head, I was like, it's okay to be an alcoholic in the military. This is going to be expected. Like, it's, yeah, you know.
Once I'm there, I'm fine,
yeah, exactly. Yeah. I was like, I'm just getting prepared. That's what I would tell my buddies. Like, I'm just getting prepared to get in the military. Like, I can't smoke weed anymore. I can't do, you know what I mean? Oh, my gosh. So, and I would just go to bars all by myself. Again, like, after work, on those days off that I'd have days off, I put them in quotations because I didn't have a day off. I was working two full-time jobs. On the weekends, I'd be at the shelter for 12 hours. And then on throughout the weekdays, I'd work from 7 a.m. to about 4 p.m. at Safe. And then from 4:30 p.m. to about 11 p.m. at the men's shelter. Wow. So, yeah, it was a lot of, and I didn't realize what I was doing to myself. Again, I thought, like, oh, this building character. You know what I mean? Like, my recruiter needs to know this because he'll tell the commander. He's working two full-time jobs. This man's, he's dedicated. And that's all I could focus on was just like, oh, man, that dedication. What do I know? You know what I mean? What can I do to go forward? One of my favorite songs, it just recently came out or what have you in, like, the past year or so. It's Doing This by Luke Combs. Okay. And I just got into country. I used to be one of those kids that, like, no, man.
Yeah,
country,
me too.
Yeah, you know, and
me
that,
too.
That's the thing. It just hits me hard. It's like, even if I, you know, and I, it brings back to that experience. Like, all of your things add up. You don't know where you are right now. You will. There's a plan. There's a bigger plan. You just don't, you know what I mean? You don't have to understand. You just got to trust the plan. Trust the process.
Yes, and, sir. Amen.
Yep. Yeah, so during that time, this was on March 23rd. I had gone out training one of our coworkers. He was a great guy. At that time, he was a great guy. He seemed very like a dude guy buddy because there wasn't many like dude guys at my line of work, if you will.
Yeah,
it was mainly primarily LGBTQ, and that's okay. I was an ally. It's just that there wasn't like that masculine kind of like, yeah, dude, football. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I this gentleman, he invited me out to go for a drink after work. At first, I was a little reluctant, and had I been more solidified on who I am now and knowing myself as a person, I would have denied and said, yeah, I'm just going to go to the gym, dude. I'm sorry, that's not for me.
Yeah.
I went out with him, and we went out to this bar I've never been to before. It was right off of like 4th Avenue, right in the sketchiest part of like downtown, like right next to like American Eat Company.
Okay.
I don't even remember what it's called, Shanties or something. It was like the bar from The Shining.
Yeah.
It really was. And that's another really good film I like to bring up as well, because that is, with mental health and addiction, that one, him going into the bar, talking to the devil, and you didn't know it was the devil there. You know what I mean?
Bro, he was so fucking real.
Right. He was like, yeah, yeah, you should be mad at them. You know what I mean? Like, oh, yeah. You know what I mean? That's how it felt going to the bar. It's just literally like, I'm going over and I'm paying this person, this bartender, you know what I mean, X amount of money to be my therapist, to be my crutch for that moment. And they're not certified for any of this.
Yeah.
They don't care. You know what I mean? Just give me my money. You know what I mean? Oh, yeah, she was evil. Oh, yeah, yeah. You know what I mean? Here's another one.
Yeah.
Like, you know what I mean? But at that time, we went out for a drink. He was talking about, you know what I mean, cool guy stuff. We were talking about, you know what I mean, relishing about college experiences. You know what I mean? Been there, done that. And things start to change. I had only bought one drink there. I went to the bathroom and I came back. I thought, you know what I mean? I said, hey, man, watch my drink. I put my hat on my drink at that time. I thought it was safe. That's how I know, you know what I mean? Someone touched my thing. I went back to my drink, and I don't remember anything right after that. I just remember him trying to get me to come home with him or whatever. He was touching my thigh, and I just was not comfortable with it, man. I told him I need to go home. And I walked back to my truck, which was over by the steakhouse, which is where we met. I believe at this moment that he was just following me right after work.
Yeah.
He followed me to where the steakhouse was. He knew I was going there for some food after work, and I was just going to go home after that. And I was derailed. He took me over to that bar right across the street, and again, he tried to get me to go home with him. And I just remember that. I just remember not wanting to go home with somebody, and I got some random person, and I don't remember if this was a dream or not, but I got some random person to blow in my interlock, and I think he was a homeless man. We just talked, and then I left the Silver Settle Steakhouse, because again, in that area, there's a lot of homeless people, and they know me by there, because I worked at the homeless shelter, so anything they need as far as food, anything... If I was getting beat up out there, you'd best be known. There's like 60 other dudes ready to jump you.
Yeah.
So yeah, evidently, you know what I mean, they took care of me. I just wish I wasn't able to start my vehicle then. I rolled out of, and I have video of this as well. I rolled out of there. It was just horrible. I don't know how I didn't go onto the highway or what have you. I was not in the right state of mind. I wasn't talking. The music wasn't going. It was like somebody else was driving that vehicle. And then you can see the video where I go down Tucson Boulevard. I just start going. I go in like 120 miles per hour. I don't even know why. I'm just going over the lines, and I'm going over the median and stuff, obviously endangering everybody out there. And then I go through the light, a red light on Valencia, and then I continue going down Tucson And then I just immediately just hit a saguaro. I hit a flagpole, and that's where the video ends, if you will. And apparently, that the police had told me after the fact that I was super suicidal. I was telling the cops that I didn't want to live. I told them that there's no use. I told them to pull out their gun and just shoot me in the head. I attempted to grab a police weapon at the time too, and I don't remember any of this. And I was taken. Yeah, there was no way I was going to do a breathalyzer or any of that. I was just not coherent. They had to bust out my window and pull me out. They asked me if I had any weapons or all that. I remember that. I remember them, you know what I mean, being sideways in my car. And apparently I sent a text message, totally coherent as well. I sent a text message to my best friends in a group chat. And I said, see you guys in hell. And my buddy just sent like a text just jokingly saying like, did they finally get up to you? Did the demons, did the goblins get up to you? And no reply, obviously. I just sent a picture of my car or my truck all sideways from inside. And they're like, what the hell is, you know what I mean? What's going on, man? And they got really nervous. Those were the first, the people that were notified kind of my situation. They thought I was dead. They thought like, oh man, yeah, like, dude, what the hell happened? Like, you know what I mean? And during that time, I wasn't being very forthcoming with my friends either. They knew I had a problem. Because every time we would be hanging out, I'd always be bringing over a six pack. You know what I mean? That 1,000-yard stare. Like, I didn't know what I was doing, but I'm going to do it. And I was always calling the military like it's a fancy way of suicide. In that regard, that's why I wanted to go. I just wanted to end it there. Didn't really think of any other type of repercussion. But and lo and behold, I wake up inside of Banner South, handcuffed to a bed, and there's an officer on my right, and he's sitting there, and I don't know what just happened. I don't know what I'm doing here. I'm like, I got to go to work. This is rigged. You know what I mean? I could hear my phone going off in the side of the, you know what I mean, in the bag where they have all your possessions in. I could hear my phone going off. It just kept going off. And then I finally like kind of moved up a little bit on the bed with all these wires sticking out of me. I didn't sign up for any of this. I don't know what's going on. I'm like, I don't even know if I was shot. I didn't know if I was injured at that rate. I was just like, I feel horrible. My whole body hurts. And who's this guy? And the officer finally, he stops looking at his memes on Instagram or whatever, puts his phone in his pocket, slaps his knees, gets up and says, all right, buddy, you're getting booked. And my mouth was so parched. I had a bloody nose right then too. I don't know why. I think it was just from the dryness or whatever. You know what I mean? Furthermore, and it was Tucson Airport Police. And when I was getting transported over to the jail, I remember everyone making fun of the Tucson Airport Police guy when I was going into the intake, and I just shaking my head, just like, please stop making fun of him. Please stop making fun of him. Like, he's gonna throw me in like detention center Guantanamo Bay or something like that. You know what I mean? Like, I guess like immediately upon like my arrival at the jail, it was dawning on me. Like, nobody knows I'm here. I might as well be dead. Then my whole family probably thinks I'm dead. My boss, everybody, like, where are you, buddy? It's like, it's 11 o'clock a.m. You know what I mean? Like, there was no way I could talk to them. Being locked up though, I was stuck in the intake facility for about 12 hours. So from about like 11 a.m. to like 11 p.m. or whatever they have you stay there for. And then you have to go to little court and you can't have your arms inside of your sleeves or whatever. They'll tell you no turtling. They'll yell at you. They're very hostile. They're very volatile at that moment. They don't know why you're there. To them, you're just scum.
Yeah.
In jail. You know what I mean?
So sad.
Yeah, yeah, it really is. And then you start thinking about all these people. You know what I mean? Like, they're human beings too. And oh, yeah, that was one thing that resonated really big with me. And it was like a thing from God as well. This lady, I'd always be so nice to her. She'd come over to the homeless shelter. All my other staff members, all the people that I worked with they were just brutally rude to her. But I knew she was going through some psychotic thing, and you know what I mean, I'd always give her food or, you know what I mean, present stuff, and we were told by our boss not to give this lady any food anymore. All the times that I gave this this person food, I saw her in the intake room as well. She was being arrested at the same exact time I was. Her name's Debbie. She carries around a teddy bear all the time, and she can get loud, but she's also a very sweet person, you know what I mean, deep down inside. Yeah. And I think that's part of the mechanism that you have to have when you're on the streets like that. Mm-hmm. You got to be able to turn a dime on the, you know what I mean, right there. You got to go complete senile psychotic sometimes.
Yeah.
The people out there, they don't only like in order to survive. So again, that's a byproduct of her environment. And I don't know, going through the intake and all that and being told like, yeah, you're being held without bond. At first it was like a $20,000 bond. I thought like, oh man, I'm going to rot here. There's no getting out of here.
Yeah.
Like, who's going to pay that? And then I remember going to housing. It was a giant thing. I went to the one pop-up where you go into detox, and I saw some horrible stuff in there, man. Oh my gosh. Yeah, because the last time I went and got my DUI or whatever, after I got sentenced for the first time, if you will, it was only one day inside of jail. It's not really anything. It's just more of a slap on the wrist. This was 40 days. 40 plus days inside of there. So immediately when I got in the detox room, yeah, it's overpacked. There's people on the floor. There, you know, I mean, it's supposed to be 8 to a pod. There was easily 11 of us inside of there. Some of us were sleeping on the floor, and then a lot of guys were sleeping in their own vomit. And some of them would be screaming in agony. I remember one guy screaming for his mother. You know what I mean? And the other guy said, "Shut up." He would always say, "Shut up." And then finally they got into it. One of the guys just started pounding the other gentleman's face. And at that moment, I tried to assist at stopping him. He had punched me as well. And then the COs had come in and broken up the fight. The guy was taken to isolation or what have you. It just like exemplified like, it's not all about recovery there, and unfortunately it's more of a systematic approach. I don't know, in a sense you just feel like a farm animal inside of there. Like, I mean, for lack of better phrasing, and especially the way that they treat the tablets and all that, like, they don't know that you haven't contacted your family, your attorney, or anybody. Nobody knows that you're there. And then again that compounded. The only solace that I found was in my peers at that moment, the people that have been through it. You heard a lot of stories in there. People were there for the DV charges, methamphetamine, paraphernalia, what have you. But moving through it really just gave me a new, it really humbled me, truly. Especially going and getting put into the towers, the oldest part of the jail, the 2 Delta. They just moved us there because they were running out of room. I went during the most excruciating time for the jail, if you will. They put us in a 3 guys inside of a 2-man cell. It was no bigger than a bathroom.
Wow.
Yeah, so, and we were there for about a week. And usually they put people there if you've been bad, if you're trying to beat somebody up, you threaten to kill somebody kind of thing. So we were just there just to experience it, I guess. After that, we moved into our housing unit. And that's where I met the majority of the people, where we started doing the Bible study. Everything started making more sense. I started helping people with their GEDs and just for free. I didn't want any commissary or anything like that. I just wanted to see them never come in here again. And that's one thing I started working on as well, is just writing out like a manifesto for my own kind of nonprofit, my own 503C, if you will, for preventing recidivism.
Yeah,
because again, we are, I love the ARC for that reason too, because the ARC is kind of like a giant stone. It has helped me immensely. That's why I'm so blessed to even be here. It's more of a shield. It's like you're putting on an armor. I just feel that more people need to be knowledgeable that this exists, as it blows my mind how many people don't know about, you know what I mean, rehabs that are in Tucson, shelters that are available to them. It's just yeah, I just want to advocate for that. That we're out here. Yeah, and that blows my mind. I guess it brings it full circle. Working on like this nonprofit idea that I had inside of jail, and then being able to come into this type of environment is so huge. It's like, what? It just doesn't make it makes sense. I just trust the process at this rate, because it's just like, well, the universe put me here, and I got to do what I got to do.
Man, I mean, not to just completely. I mean, I won't let that soak in for all the listeners too, because that was a lot that happened. But before any of that happened to you, did you have faith growing up, brother? Like, was that something that was ever instilled in you?
Yes and no, to be honest with you. And the reason being is that my family was we grew up a Catholic family, if you will. Okay. You know how the story goes of most Catholics. Dabbled in it with like the first 2 children, and then just kind of forgot about it with the 3rd one. I never went to communion. I was only baptized in the Catholic Church. And actually, funny enough, before that, I would talk to God. I wouldn't think that no one's listening kind of thing. Just kind of like send a wish out there, but just feel like, oh, what's the point? I just did it because whatever. And at a point there, even like towards like high school or whatever, I was getting really big in the satanic ideology. It was horrible.
Not even realizing, truly pulled into it.
Yeah, and I was making collages in art class, just diabolical things. You know what I mean? Like just chopping out like pieces of out of like a magazine, darkening people's eyes. That was my art style.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I mean, there's definitely, it's crazy because you don't even see it when you're that young. You're just kind of brought in. Dude, there's so many similarities, dog. Like so many. You know, when my wife and I were separated for a while there, you know, like how you said in The Shining, when he's at the bar and he's talking to the devil, dude, I had a very similar experience with a gentleman who actually owned a strip club at one of these bars that I was at, and was like, yo, dog, like I can get you in, let's roll type of thing. And, you know, and I mean, dude, like there's a lot of shit that happened during that time. But I mean, it's amazing how when you're at your most vulnerable, when you're at your lowest point, right? I mean, it's like they say, the devil is a prowling lion. He's there to rip and kill and destroy. Yep. That's exactly what he was doing, is putting that into your life. And you don't see that at that point.
You don't.
I mean, dude, I'm just going over everything that you just talked about. And I'm just seeing, you know, how the similarities in my life and the stuff that I've experienced, you know, and then going into, you know, getting locked up and having to deal with that. Do you feel like that was the first time that you ever really felt God's voice? Like,
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, again, I was put inside. Oh, man. And I think about it.
Take us back to that moment. I want to talk about that.
One of the biggest things of jail, again, was when we went into the housing unit, that one Juliet. When I first came in, I thought I was going to get eaten alive. This is where I'm going to get stabbed. They're going to think I'm like 60 days in or whatever, because that was going around the jail. It still goes around the jail. They don't know who's 60 days in. The way that I talk, the way that I present myself, they either thought I was like a kid fiddler, I was an undercover cop. Or, yeah.
That's what I was going to say. You're sent in from the prisons.
Right, exactly. So, and that's the thing. I do attribute it. Like, there has to be a higher power out there. There has to be. Because at that rate, I went in there totally scared. I didn't know what was going to happen. I even put on like a Chicano accent. I didn't know what was going on, man. Like, they told me, like, I had to present my documents and stuff. Like, I gave them my court documents. I was talking like this when I came in. I was like, hey, man, how's it going? They were like, hey, man, like, you, who do you ride with, a paisa or Chicano? And I was like, I don't even know what that means, man. I was like, you know what I mean? I made a spur of the moment decision, and I said, Chicano. And I think that was the right thing to say, because I didn't get beat up.
All right.
So, yeah.
There you go.
So in that regard as well, it that blew my mind with like the politics that they have inside of jail, with like divvying it up by race. Because again, I was talking to everybody, whether you be whether known as kinfolk, a wood, or a chief, or whatever. I don't care. You know what I mean? You're a human being in my eyes, and I guess that kind of... That kind of messed with the authority, but I feel like I was a big stone in there, because here's this weird dude why are you here?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, none of these guys could figure it out. And again, I would just help them out with their homework and stuff. And that's why they started probably getting a little suspicious of me. They're like, man. Oh, what's, you know what I mean? But evidently, you know what I mean? There was instances inside of there, like, where I said, son of a bitch, jokingly to this other gentleman. And he said, like, oh, man, you're lucky. I don't have to run it in here with you. You know what I mean? I don't have to rough you up. You know what I mean? If another head was in here, we'd have to settle that story. And I know, take you in the bathroom and I'll beat you up. You know what I mean? I'm like, thank God that didn't happen. You know?
Yeah.
And this guy had, like, you know what I mean? But he had to make it known, per se, because of the social status. He's going to be there for a while longer, if you will. Just let him have
that's
that.
Crazy.
But it is. You know what I mean? And there were multiple instances like that. All the fights that I saw that happened in the night, they'd tie up their socks around their knuckles so that the COs wouldn't know that they beat up on some guy. And if that guy would tell the COs that he did get beat up, he would get rolled out, but then they'd find him anyways and some other cell. Yeah. So,
and that's all stuff you just experienced in just those days that you were there.
Yeah. You know what I mean? And again, another thing, like, the devil's in the details too. Because when I was down in my last time being sentenced, I remember this gentleman pulling out a bag of fentanyl. It was about like 100 pills or whatever out of his rectum inside of the, you know what I mean? We were waiting to see the judge. He's surrounded by COs outside of this cell. And this guy is just, he just pulls out a big bag of fentanyl pills. And he's like, yeah, I wouldn't have left this inside of my cell with my cellie. He'd be taking that, but I got people like cash apping me. He was just so open about it. Like, I'm having people cash app me $1,000. I got my lady.
Excuse the snort. That was funny.
No, yeah. I'm just like, I'm just trying to stare at my feet, because there's nothing you can stare at in there. There's you know, it's called the dungeon for a reason. It's cold. It's, you know what I mean? And then here's these guys. You know what I mean? I'm just, and in my mind, I'm just like, why, man? Like, especially here. Like, I don't know. And again, it brings me back to like that faith thing, because I've heard it a lot. Drugs are, they're huge in jail. Yeah. They say they weed them out. There's always something that gets through, and, mm-hmm. and just being in that environment, not being able to take them, that's a blessing in and of itself. Not, you know what I mean? Because a lot of your items that you have inside a jail or whatever, that's all you got. And somebody could easily just go inside your milk or whatever, drop a few pills, and boom, you test positive for that, and you might even get page two'd. And I think the one thing that really that resonated with me again was just that protection that I felt again. From those possibly disastrous situations where you might have said something wrong or used the wrong toilet, someone didn't like that. Because again,
that's crazy.
Yeah, you have all these guys that are isolated together. You know what I mean? And a lot of them, some of them have been there for a lot longer than you, and then they're gonna have to see you leave. It's bittersweet. It truly is. And but I wish the best for all of them. I mean, they were my brothers, regardless of like how, you know what I mean, how some days we felt, how some days we were treated, or whatever. We were all in there together.
And with the faith, it was the Bible studies that brought you closer?
Yes, yeah, because right after I got out of jail, I got baptized. I made that step.
Amen, dude, that's beautiful, bro.
I still talk to those guys, too, the ones that I got out with, because I leave that to God, too. One of my two best friends that I met in there. I got a Jose and I got Alex, and they were foundations. They were kind of like the guys I could talk to that had that intellectual ability. Because, again, unfortunately, a lot of people in there, all they've known was the streets or mm-hmm. just drug use. And that's all they know. They, as far as like business ideals or anything else that might be like, that be proposed to be more ambitious, They're not really brought up to be thinking that way.
Dude, I mean, it makes perfect sense. You talked about this guy who pulled all these pills out of his ass.
Yeah, like, exactly.
For him to do that and think so nonchalant, it kind of makes you feel like, what has his life been up? You know what
exactly.
I mean?
Exactly, but maybe it's just not his time yet, but something will be dropped. And I like to think about the story even about like General Butt Naked. He was a general out there in Africa. He used to eat children's hearts, and he eventually converted. Yeah, I know. He's changed around. Now he preaches the word of God, and it's just so... It blows your mind, man. Yeah, he's remorseful for all the things that have happened, but they happen. It's never too late. It's never too late.
Yeah.
And that's the one thing I want to bring up to people as well, man. It's like the pain of changing, as soon as the pain of changing is less than the pain of just staying the same, it, you know, you're in the right place. You're feeling the call. And during that time, I felt that. And I couldn't have made that decision on my own. And thank God that those things did happen. You know what I mean? All those horrible things,
yeah,
if you will, because those build you up, and I have those as like talking points. They make great stories.
Yeah, you know absolutely. What I mean? Like,
you got to be uncomfortably comfortable sometimes. So
yeah, dude. No, for reals, bro. And I mean, dude, I may sound like a broken record, but unless I just want to share it with you because I've shared this before on the show, but they say just like a beautiful picture, character is developed in darkness.
Yeah, and exactly that. You need darkness to see the light. And honestly, and I think that's also part of my retribution, if you will. I needed to know that there was a devil to know that there is a God. Like you got to smell.
That's so deep, bro. Yeah. That's so deep. That's real though.
Yeah, smell less like safe and more like smoke, man, because people are going through it. And you know... as much as we hear it from like Jehovah Witness, kind of like, oh, they have it all together kind of thing. The best stories are the ones that, you know what I mean? They got it together. They started building that Luke Skywalker kind of build up. Mm-hmm. And it brings me back to like video game kind of people. You know what I mean? Like you start from nothing. It's that 0 to 100 real quick kind of Drake. You know what I mean? Start from the bottom. Now we're here.
Yeah.
And I play that song a lot lately. Because again, it's just like, you're sending that motion out. You just want to manifest that, even if you're going
and
through
that beat during this season too. It's just got that kind of like it's weird.
Like a weird, like, all right, it's like a take a step back from yourself, and it's like, man, you started from the bottom and you're here. You know what I mean? Like you're still going. Like, you know what I mean? The world's your oyster. It's what you make of it, man. Yeah, and again, you will get kicked. That's part of just being human. It's a human experience.
That's awesome.
It's like, yeah, but it's like, how do you get back up, man? You know what I mean? Like how are we gonna, not only for yourself but the people around you? Because you don't realize how much power you have on the people around you. Even if you think you're isolated, you're a solo, kind of lonely person, you have no idea how many eyes are watching you.
Yeah.
I even feel that at the gym sometimes. You're just hitting it. You know what I mean? Focused on your own thing. Other people are going to start doing, you know what I mean, mimicking you.
Yeah.
So and without them even realizing it, you know what I mean? You're setting that tone. And I felt like that was the tone that I set inside of jail. That's the tone I try to set wherever I try to be, just to uplift. You know what I mean? Yeah, you're going through it, but you know what I mean? Nobody, you got this. And if you need to talk to somebody, because that's okay to feel that way.
Yes, sir. Yeah, absolutely. My last question to you is, how has the relationships with your family changed since this?
Oh, well, yeah, we talk a lot more. Again, I'm way more open with them. They know where I'm at. I've been so forthcoming. They know I had a problem with alcohol, and I didn't want to express that. And in that, we found our own types of, like my brother. For instance, he's got 2 DUIs as well. So he had them prior to my 2 incidents. And he somewhat felt responsible for this. He actually stopped working when I was in jail. He got very depressed. My father as well. They were like, they couldn't believe it. I was on my way over to the military. Everything set in stone. So I feel like my whole family felt like they had a part in it. And upon my arrival from jail, we had this giant, we had a barbecue. We had carne asada. Sounds, you know what I mean? Like, yeah, but that's the thing. You know what I mean? That's the home feeling. You know what I mean? Even though we go through all this, the ruckus and all that, we still got each other.
Yep.
Through it was thick and thin. And I talk about my father having like a second family in Colombia or whatever. And again, like I say, my father's life is, it's its own show, being flown out of like Air Force bases on commercial airplanes and all that. I don't know the half of it. He's always in South Carolina quotations. You know what I mean? Like, I don't. Yeah, all right, Dad. You know what I mean? That's the thing. And he got me into like the stock trading and stuff like that. So again, like we've built our relationship in a more positive outlet. You know what I mean? Like we could still flex that, like trying to be on top of it, more of like that abundant bachelor life, if you will, but more family oriented.
Yeah.
Again, with stock portfolios as well, like cryptocurrency or anything like that. That's really where my father and I connect, and UFO conspiracies.
Yep, that's cool.
Yeah, so yeah, it's,
well, good.
And
man,
it's always been there. You know what I mean? Like my father and I've always like had that kind of like connection as far as like conspiracies. I think just like honing in on those things that you care about the people that you love, instead of focusing like, oh, my brother plays his video games too loud at night, like I can't sleep. You know what I mean? Yeah. Think about the good things about that person. You'll see more of that. You will.
Absolutely. And yeah. I think that comes with healing because it's so much more. I mean, the thoughts I really feel the thoughts are what start that ugliness in your life. Those ugly thoughts create an ugly life, right? And it's the same with beautiful thoughts and loving thoughts.
Yeah.
They create a beautiful and loving environment. And, you know.
And exactly that. Science is good. And again, I come back to science and, you know, I mean, where we're headed with a social field and all that. But, you know, I mean, we think about frequencies and all this stuff that we still don't have any idea. You know, I mean, it wouldn't harm you just to smile. You know, I mean, there's smiling classes out in Japan. You know, what I mean, they teach you how to smile just like throughout the day, even if you're going through it. Like, you know, what I mean, because it's healthy for not only your face, your mental, and all that. It actually does an immense. It'll help other people too. You see a smile, it's the okay. What's he about? You know, what I mean, what's he on? Like, I focus even, you know, on my recent car accident because I was just rear-ended this last Thursday.
Yeah, you showed me the video of that.
Yeah, you know, what I mean. At first, I was very, you know what I mean, I was perplexed. I was like, oh, I just got this. But, you know, it's another thing. It's just another motion in disguise. And, you know what I mean, sometimes you'll be tested. Oh, wait, where's your optimism at?
Major props, though, getting out and recording, making sure you had Bro, that's so dope that you do that, man.
I try. You know what I mean? And again, I lead it to all my previous experiences.
Yeah, yeah.
if I had recorded, and that's the thing, man. I don't know. I've had my struggles, too, with many types of instances with depression as well.
Yeah.
During my last stint, when I was going in the military, when I was drinking hard or whatever, you know what I mean, during that time, I believe it was in January, I had a close call. I drank myself like unconscious at my house. My family wasn't around, and I woke up at like 3 a.m. and I noticed like my handgun was right next to my head.
Ooh.
I don't know how close I came that night. Yeah, there was a bullet in the chamber, and I was sleeping hunched over my bed like I was standing and I had just passed out or something. And that sticks with me hard. I don't know. You know what I mean? That wasn't me.
It was not. Yeah. I think of the little alien on Men in Black. Remember when they open up that dude's face and the little alien's laying there all fucking out? It's like when you're using substances, bro, I'm starting to believe more and more. You're like when possessed. You're using substances and when they become, when they become a stronghold on you is when you open up these portals and all these demonic entities.
Yeah, like your body's a Ouija board.
Yeah, it wouldn't have been you pulling that trigger that night. It would have been.
Dude, I don't know. That just resonates with me. Be hard.
Oh man!
Like again, like you know, what I mean, there has got to be a higher power.
Absolutely, there's obviously a darker one.
Yeah,
way lower one, man. That's crazy.
Yeah, what finds that line, man? Like, you
bro,
know
check
I mean?
This out. I know that not everyone can see this, but I'm gonna share this with you. Look at the screensaver here that I have on this computer, right? So I have three screens here. I want to focus on this one right here on the left.
Oh yeah.
Look at the red, right? It almost looks like a dragon. Yeah. You see that? There's a dragon. It's dark. It's red. To me, this is like a resemblance of hell, right? Yep. It's a resemblance of hell. If you go right here to the top one, you can see this is the only one that has these little orbs in it, these little like planet things. And I always kind of see this as like the world that we're living in now. This is the galaxy. This is all the planets, right? But you can see the evil forces from this side kind of creeping in from this bottom screen. But then if you focus on this one down here on the bottom right, it's a beautiful pink. There's a light. There's little orbs out there. To me, this is heaven. This is our world right here that we're in, and this is the hell, bro. Like, to me...
You could cross over either way, man.
Yeah, you can cross over either way. But if you look right here on this top one right here, you can see the heaven creeping in from the top, and you can also see the hell creeping in from the bottom, and they both kind of collide in this little... I don't know, man. I saw this picture, and it just, like, spoke to my heart. That's why I leave it on there, dude.
And that's the thing. It brings me back to, like, that Jekyll and Hyde. I mean, we all have that, like... We all have that angel on our shoulder and also the demon on our shoulder. It's just, who are you feeding the most?
That's real.
Yeah, and that's the thing. I realized over the time, like I was really focusing on my knots. You know what I mean? What I don't have, who I wasn't, who I was supposed to be. You know what I mean? Not focusing on that present moment. What do I have right now? What should I be grateful for? You know what I mean? Like my life, my abundance, still got my family. You know what I mean? Yeah, sure, they won't be able to talk to me. They're still alive. You know what I mean? They're still alive. You still have that time to reconcile.
Thank God, yeah.
Yeah, and thank God. You know what I mean? And again, even with my vehicle, it still drives. Sure, the alignment's off, but hey, man, it's American-made. It looks, you know what I mean? It looks even more cool. I'm like, hey, yeah, it survived this, okay?
Yeah, man.
Any good questions?
Dude, you know what, bro? I really want to thank you, dog, for coming, man. This has been a beautiful experience, and I really, really enjoyed myself, man. Dude. It was awesome getting to meet you, dude, and I can consider you a friend. That means a lot to me, dog. Thank you.
Honestly, yeah, anytime, man. And again, I'd like to share my music with you because that's even an expert of that time.
Let's do, bro. If you got something, we could even share it on the episode. Okay, I'm down.
Yeah, for sure. Again, because it just exemplifies otherwise, like, my feeling of just, like, lost. I didn't know. And I had people reaching out to me online as well, like, hey, man, don't feel this way. Like, your music is for you. Like, do it for you. Why are you trying to, you know what I mean? Why are you trying to impress somebody else? At that moment, I didn't realize, like, no, man, you don't understand. I'm trying to be, like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I'm trying to be number one.
Yeah, I feel you.
Well, you only get to number one by being you.
Bro, I feel you, man.
Yeah, so that's exactly.
That was my life for the longest time.
Bro. Yeah, man. You know, I mean, we're always just trying to chase this, like, ideal type of way of living. And we don't realize we got it right now, man. Like, yeah, it just resonates, man. That's why I try to remind people, man, you're here. God bless. You know what I mean? We're here. I got you. We're, you know what I mean? This is now.
Man.
All the trauma that you've been through, thank God it happened to make you who you are now.
It's crazy. If anybody, you know, anybody who's part of the facility here, we need to protect this man and we need to make sure we keep him here because I know if he's barely scratching the surface of what he could bring to a facility like this, man. You're an incredible person. You got an incredible spirit about you, and it has been a true honor to have you in the studio with us today, bro.
Thank you. Yeah, it's been a lot, man.
Absolutely. Ladies and gentlemen, get up out your seat and show love to our homeboy, Alex, one more time, man. Hey, I also want to throw this out there for all of the listeners. If any of these episodes, if you have any type of words of encouragement for anybody that we've had on the show and you want to give them some sort of love, some sort of positivity, whatever it may be, email the email that you see in the show notes. And I promise you, I put it on my heart that I will go and I will make sure that they get these notes. You know, I mean, we have a lot of people and we have to help encourage one another. And I want to thank everybody for listening. Alex, thank you for coming in. And, you know, just like, like we always say, man, if you know somebody who's gone through it, anybody experiencing a hardship in life, whatever it may be, I'm going to ask that you please share this episode with them and that you please, you know, kind of, you know, let them know that that's exactly what this is here for, is to be able to help others out there. And for everyone else who's a continued listener and been a part of this since we started, I want to thank you guys very much. I hope you guys are having an amazing week. Much love. God bless you all. And we will see you on the next one. Peace.
Peace.
What's going on, everybody? This is Buddha from the Arcast, and I just wanted to thank you for checking out this week's episode. It means a lot, and if you could share it with a friend or a loved one, somebody you need in recovery, or maybe somebody who just needs that little bit of extra positivity in their life, we'd greatly appreciate it. If you would like to join us here on the Arcast, either in the studio live or online, hit us up. The links are down in the show notes of this episode, and on there, you can find direct links to our main website here at America's Rehab Campus and all of our social media platforms. Follow us. We keep the posts positive and motivational, focused on recovery, health, and wellness. As you know, in this modern day and age, we need as much love as possible, y'all. And as always, if you or somebody you know is in need of substance abuse treatment, please don't hesitate to give us a call. We're open 24 hours a day, and our direct phone number is 1-833-272-7342. Once again, that phone number is 1-833-272-7342. I hope you all have a beautiful rest of your day. Much love, and God bless. Peace.